Open the door to huge savings now at Menards. Enhance the appearance of your home with a new stylish garage door. Choose from our large in-stock selection of ideal garage doors or design your own using our free garage door designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big and ideal garage doors. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Hey, it's Tony Bruschi, and this is our Week in Review. Over the weekend, taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations and stories that we've covered for you of the last week. Brand new episodes back Monday morning, bright and early, 5 a.m. here on the podcast.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Quite an interesting Friday morning for you here at the Hidden Killers Podcast and the True Crime Today Newsroom. We are joined for the next 2 segments. We're going to drop one right now. Obviously, you're listening to it. And then he's going to be coming back for another segment here in just a bit. Gary Upton is joining us. Gary Upton is the Osage County, Oklahoma undersheriff that is involved in the new investigation into Dennis Rader, BTK. You may have seen him on television. You may have heard some of his quotes lately about what is going on, but we're going to dive deep into this, and it's not just going to be like on television where you get your 3-minute, 5-minute little, you know, let's answer really basic questions and then on to the next segment. No, we're going to be talking with Gary here for about 40 minutes straight in about 20-minute segment blocks about what is going on into the investigation, into Dennis Rader, BTK, with some of these new developments that we've been seeing over the last several weeks now, although this investigation has actually been going on for quite a bit longer prior or unknown to many of us, where the attention really kind of was brought into this in the last handful of weeks when they started actually digging up the former property of Dennis Rader, BTK, in Park City, Kansas. Gary, welcome to the program and thank you for joining us. I want to make sure we're getting everybody up to speed because this is such a fluid situation. I'm curious as to where things are at right now. I know recently we've heard possibly 4 cases connected to BTK with a fair amount of certainty from your area, also from Carrie Rawson, who is the daughter of BTK. Can you give us a general overview of where the investigation into BTK is literally standing as of this point in time here on the 15th of September of 2023?
Yeah, so currently with the Osage County Sheriff's Office, obviously our investigation started with small town Pawhuska here in Osage County and Cynthia Dawn Kinney, a 16-year-old cheerleader that was abducted in the middle of the day in 1976 from a laundromat. And through that investigation, it just started to spiral outwards from there as we dug into his journals and his maps and every little piece of material that was produced by him that we were able to connect the dots on. And looking at his work history as well and his Boy Scout history and everything else in between, we drew a link between where he was at on a particular weekend in Missouri and saw a connection between him and the Shauna Beth Garber case just outside of Anderson, Missouri in McDonald County.
Yep.
And that was kind of like the number two one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel pretty good about four. There's some people that are counting upwards of 10 based on agencies that have come forward with really strong suspicions. And we see it too, but I feel confident talking about four for sure.
Sure.
So there's there's the Shauna Beth Garber that piggybacks on our original case. And then from there, we saw a lot of his writings that centered on Hayes, Kansas. And he had a particular fondness for Hayes, Kansas. There was a bar in Hayes, Kansas that he was interested in and stalking. And there was I'm trying to remember her name. It just escaped me. But anyways, we've worked with the Hayes, Kansas Sheriff's Office there and seen some connections between their case and him in that particular area, because she was abducted also in the middle of the day. Mm-hmm. Vehicle door was left open. Her jacket was found north of Hayes, Kansas, neatly folded in a culvert. Mm-hmm. The car keys were still in the jacket, and it looked like an item of clothing that we suspect that he probably wanted to come back and get at a later point in time. But maybe it was, you know, the law enforcement effort was probably too hot, and he just kind of just ditched it, left it, never came back for it. But some of his journal writings indicated that he dug a grave that he had intended to use north of Hayes, Kansas. That was in a different date and time than that actual disappearance in Hayes. So that was number three. Number four goes back to his actual interviews where he's talking with the Wichita police, and he's trying to confess to Sherry Baker, a Black female, I think, from like around 1974. And they try to shut him down on that and tell him, no, we know you didn't do that one, and just basically moved on in the interview and actually tried to present some other ones to him. And he didn't take credit for these other ones that they were trying to present to him. To me, that kind of indicated he wasn't really trying to rack up numbers.
It's interesting. Because he said before, you know, he doesn't want to take credit for someone else's work, as sick as that it sounds.
I know.
When we look at this and we go back, because my big question is this information, these journals, the writings that he has, they go way back. And yes, a lot of these were sitting in evidence all the way back into 2008, where he's talking about hidey holes and the space underneath his shed in Park City. My big question is, why now? Like, why are we suddenly looking into this now? What changed or what sparked this investigation to dig into some of these pieces where, like I said, seemingly the evidence has been sitting there for decades?
Right. Well, it started here in Pawhuska, Osage County. Our sheriff, late in December in 2022, sometime around Christmas, some particular night, he had insomnia and he got up well past the middle of the night. It was like 3:30 in the morning. We joke around with him that we said, oh, you must have woke up at exactly 3:33, you know, one of Dennis Bader's famous numbers that he loves.
Yeah.
But at any rate, he did wake up and he watched a Netflix documentary, Catching Killers, I think it was. It was season two, and I can't remember the episode one, Bind, Torture, Kill. Mm-hmm. It was about BTK. And he sat all the way through that, and a light bulb came on. He realized how close Wichita and Park City was to Pawhuska. Mm-hmm. And then he saw also that Dennis Rader worked for ADT. Mm-hmm. Started looking at our hometown case and the laundromat and the fact that the bank across the street from the laundromat was being built at the time. And we also ascertained that 80% of the commercial businesses were using ADT. ADT had really cornered the market back in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like one of those Southwestern Bell, Ma Bell kind of things until they kind of got broke up a little bit.
Sure.
So we knew with 80% certainty that, well, that bank probably had an ADT alarm installed, and Dennis Rader was a regional alarm installer at the time. And so there was a high likelihood that he could have been down in the area, most especially when we went through his journals and saw a particular journal entry from 1976, the same year that Cynthia Kinney turned up missing. In that same month and year time frame, titled Bad Wash Day.
Yeah.
And so it's a particular entry that literally talks about two different projects at once. He's talking about Project 17th Street. And then just a little further down in that entry, he kind of segues into Bad Laundry Day. And and the reason why is because he was going to attempt a breaking and entering at a house on 17th Street. Pawhuska does have a 17th Street that's just literally just right up the street from this laundromat. And so we speculated, well, maybe there was a small dog or somebody was home, or he indicated in his entry too much noise.
Yeah.
So he decided to move on. And that's where later in that same entry, he talks about the, I think, a brunette or somebody that he was watching at the laundromat.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, his notation of C9 in those entries is always a reference to his incomplete manuscript for a book he wanted to write and have put out upon his death.
Mm-hmm.
And C9 was shorthand for chapter 9, and chapter 9 was supposed to be for basically referencing and expanding upon all his successful hits or projects. And it's just interesting that he wrote, called everything a project. You know?
Well, I mean, to find that those incidences line up very well, obviously raising a lot of red flags to kind of connect those sort of dots. Granted, this the murder happened back in 1976, so there's got to be a lot of challenges beyond just a normal case of trying to connect Dennis Rader to this, beyond kind of the surface things where it's like, well, it looks like he was pretty damn close when this person died, but obviously far more than that needs to be found. What?
Yeah,
and I know that there has been some things. There was talk, I know, of a green dress, a blanket, and some of those connections going back to some of those pictures that Dennis took of himself dressed in victims' clothing and such. Can you talk about that a little bit more? Extrapolate on that more of what are you seeing and what kind of evidence are you finding to really connect him more in that direction other than just he was doing ADT across the street?
Right, yeah. And as it started to spiral out from our actual victim into other victims, we determined that there was other victims in Oklahoma that he may have had access to. One in particular down around Muskogee, I believe her last name was Rose, and she had a red blanket.
Mm-hmm.
And what we saw in his Polaroids was a red blanket that he was fond of posing on in women's clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And that looked like the red blanket that was part of the police report that was missing, you know, in her death. We would like to gain access to the evidence. We will, we believe, soon. And if we find a red blanket sitting on the property room shelves, we would like to test it for DNA and see if it has her DNA on it. Because if she had that blanket in her possession with her boyfriend, they stayed in a hotel for quite some time over a weekend, and it was indicated that red blanket was there with them. We suspect that DNA will be on it, both from her and her boyfriend. And also, I mean, obviously, Dennis Rader will have it on him as on there as well. But
is that the type of connection that is really going to need to be made at this point, either a DNA connection like that, or let's say there isn't DNA on it, but you can identify an item in one of those pictures that belonged to a victim. It could be one of many, obviously. And then something that Dennis Rader had in his possession. The other question would be if the item itself is even in evidence or if it was just in the pictures themselves and connecting an item that somebody had 40 years ago with what Dennis took a picture of. That can't be an easy task.
It's not, of course. And if we can't find the red blanket, obviously that's a part of that circumstantial evidence that we have a ton of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's enough to add to the bucket of circumstantial evidence and move for a grand jury or what have you, and let the chips fall where they may. You know, he took a lot of Polaroids and with him in them in different poses with different pieces of women's garb and undergarments on. And so if we do find those undergarments in the property room that match that and also match victims that we've determined that didn't get looked at initially past the 10, then we feel that we're on the right track. Everyone that I've talked to believes definitely 100% he killed more than 10 people.
What is going on with the evidence that has been found? I know you were there at the Park City residence digging up where Dennis had indicated he had a hidey hole, as he called them, underneath his shed. And I know some items were found there. Can you talk about how that process went once you found the items of interest underneath that shed, where that shed once was? What was the process? Did those go into evidence immediately? How were those sort of things handled to be sure that they weren't going to be tainted in some way, shape, or form when this is turning into somewhat of an open investigation?
Right, exactly. And this investigation really hasn't gained the traction that we wanted it to until now. Mm-hmm. I think by approaching the media, we've actually gained quite a bit of traction and also a little bit of heat rounds or a torpedo in particular from our district attorney.
Yeah.
But that's something that we're handling through the legal channels, and that'll be a subject for another day.
Sure.
At any rate, no, we intercepted correspondence from Dennis Rader to one of his fans outside the walls of the prison that indicated by his hand that he had hidden a mason jar in the ground underneath his storage shed. Mm-hmm. So we went back to that location in April, determined that the storage shed was gone, the house was gone, and the property was owned by Park City.
Yep.
We had Park City police on hand, and they let us dig around the edges of a concrete sidewalk that had been poured there to lead to the back of that neighborhood where there's a children's park.
Yeah.
And that's when we found, just under the concrete, the pantyhose. And what he had indicated in his correspondence to his fan, or actually I think it was a love interest that he was talking to, and he was kind of being braggadocious.
Yeah.
At any rate, he indicated that there was driver's licenses and trophies and stuff like this in a little mason jar. Well, that's all we found in April, because we really just didn't have, we couldn't gain enough of the confidence of Park City to start flipping concrete side sections of the sidewalk.
So all that was found so far has been the pantyhose. There was not the mason jar with the IDs found?
That was in April, right. Okay. And so we took another stab at it last month, and that's when we came in with the permission of Park City and them on hand. And, you know, that with their blessing, we didn't need a warrant or anything like that, and started flipping concrete. Mm-hmm. And that's when we dug and found the actual spot that he did. It was a hidey hole, because the sides of it were lined in roofing material, the asphalt roofing material that the composite roofing material that you would use on a roof to kind of keep the dirt from kind of coming in too much on that area where he would have had the mason jar.
Mm-hmm.
We saw gravel, the small round gravel that you would buy at Lowe's in a bag.
Yeah.
Like it was clearly different from the actual dirt that was native to that area. And down at the very bottom of that little hidey hole that we dug into was another concrete paver. Mm-hmm. The floor of his shed was lined in concrete pavers for, you know, just to have a floor inside that shed. It's one of those typical sheds you'd buy at Lowe's that's all metal sides, metal roof. Yeah, just a little dinky thing. No jar there. And but we did find remnants of materials there, and little bits and pieces of some chains and some clearly women's personal effects that we believe would be trophy items.
Mm-hmm.
So we collected those, and those are in evidence and secure in our possession. And we are in the process of accessing the evidence that Wichita has, and that's what we're moving forward with, and it should just be a matter of time before that happens.
Gary Upton, he's the undersheriff of Osage County, Oklahoma, and we are going to continue our conversation with him in just a few minutes. Drop it on the feed is part two to that conversation. If you want it, be sure to press subscribe right now. Wherever you download podcasts, you don't miss that. If you want an ad-free experience of everything we do, so you can listen to every single interview, number one, in advance of its public release. It can be like 5-6 days in advance. Plus, no ads whatsoever. Become a premium subscriber to our channel, True Crime Today. just go to the channel on Apple Podcasts, and you'll see the option right there to sign up. You can do monthly or yearly. You'll get access to everything ad-free, binge away, as literally we make it. It's there for you well in advance and with no commercials. That support helps keep this program on the air. More with Gary Upton coming up in just a few minutes. Press subscribe right now. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.